will you do without freedom? Will you fight?
Welcome to Leverage Addicts, the podcast for investors looking to maximize returns through leverage. Join host, seasoned mortgage professional and real estate enthusiast, Blandon Lerm, as we explore property investing strategies and learn how to navigate the market to build new wealth.
What's going on, everybody? It's Blandon here. Welcome to another episode of Leverage Addict Podcast, where we talk about property and finance strategies here in New Zealand. In this episode, I'm going to share some of the lessons that I've taken in 2023. I took the time last night to reflect. What did I learn in 2023? What are the good things that I did? And what are some areas for improvement? And so I'm going to share four key lessons with you. And two of them are going to be improvements that I need to work on. And then two of them that I believe I did right and is something that I will build on. And so if you're a new investor or you are a seasoned investor, hopefully there will be something for you. And if you do find value in this episode, all I ask for is for one thing, and that is to share this episode with someone that will benefit from it. So before I dive into the four lessons, maybe I'll talk about two things. One is the market conditions from last year, and then sort of the plan and the things that I was doing last year in property investing wise, and a little bit about my personal life as well, so that you know, yeah, maybe those will play into your property investing. So first of all, market that we were in, very interesting, because since 2021, interest rate has only been going up from 2.5%, and interest rate went to 6-7 really quickly. And so last year we were playing around with 7% interest rate. So almost triple from where it was 2 years ago. And that is a huge, huge thing in the property market, because this will change the way you look at properties. There'll be different types of people that are going into the market. You know, first home buyers are not buying $1.5, $2 million homes. They're more likely to try and buy something that has less mortgage, less obligation. If people are buying those higher value properties, they're probably a lot more well off. They have a lot more cash. People downsizing. So that is sort of like your main first home buyer market. Your investor market, they virtually left that property development market, right? Mom and dad investors are not looking to become developers anymore, because any land bank is going to cost them 60-70K a year quite easily, if not even more. And so you've got a lot of people that are out of the market because the interest rate is so high. The strategy has shifted from everyone becoming a developer to now we actually have to go for solid strategy where cash flow is king, right? They're buying in the regions. Last year, we saw a lot more people being receptive to learning about properties. And so that is the market, right? Unemployment rate was still relatively low, meaning that, you know, the bank or the Reserve Bank wasn't in a hurry to actually lower the interest rate because, you know, people still have their jobs. And that is actually one of the indicators on where interest rates would go. So that is the market. And also, you got to remember, you've got property prices dropping quite a bit, especially in the main centers like Auckland, Hamilton, Wellington, cities like that. They had a massive drop in the market. And because of that, property investors or people who want to get into investing are just scared. Like, is this going to keep going? And also, there's a massive driver on the land bank costs as well, or land bank prices, because construction costs went up, you know. When we were talking about 2021, it could cost $2,300 per square meter to build houses. But last year, we were talking about like $3,000 or more per square meter. So if you look at that, it's a massive jump, 25% or more in terms of construction costs. So then this dampens the prices on land banks. And that's the market we were in. So there were a lot of good deals if you were in a strong cash position. So if you're a new investor, you're going for cash flow, or if you're more experienced and you're ready to go, it was a really good market to be in because the prices were really good. What was I focused on? Well, I kind of split my life into three portions, you know, like your personal relationship, like family, church is important to me. And then, you know, you've got your personal investments and, you know, passion projects. There is profession. Profession is work, and I run a business with my colleagues, with my team. And then there is also your wealth, right? You've got wealth, profession, personal life. Those are the three things. And essentially the wealth side is everything like your properties, because those are the things that you're looking after in terms of in the background. Like, you do something in the background and it keeps going. So if we look at last year, what was I focused on? Well, I threw growth goals out of the business because I know like the market was a bit tougher. And so instead of trying to grow, my mindset was set to become more resilient. That's actually the approach that I took for my personal portfolio and the business as well. So I didn't want to set massive target to give the team massive pressure in terms of like, hey, we have to grow a certain percentage. Instead, we actually focused on how to become more efficient. We outsourced certain processes to overseas, right? We restructured a business, and it actually was a massive upgrade as well, because what I learned last year was that, you know, there are certain processes that we can outsource for half the price. And because you're paying someone overseas, you could actually get significantly more senior people who are more experienced, so they can do those jobs better than if I was to hire someone local and I had to pay more, but they're less experienced. So overall productivity went up because of the more senior people that we're hiring, just learning to run those processes. And so that was a massive part. Family was important last year. My second one, he was 1 year old. So spending that time at home or with the family in the weekend was important. I wasn't working as much in the weekend as I was before. You know, I was trying to spend more time with the family. I was looking at less open homes. There was a period where almost every weekend I'm looking at open homes, but last year was priority looking at spending that time with family. Wealth-wise, I bought a property at the end of 2022. So it settled sort of like end of 2022. And then I was still renovating it in 2023. There was a multi-unit cash flow property in Martin. And it turned out really good because, you know, projecting around 10% gross yield by the end of it, it was after everything was done, it was over 11.4%. The reason I made that decision, even though interest rate was really high, the one thing that I was looking at and I realized I didn't stick to my principle. And that was like lesson number one, right? I was realizing that my cash flow to debt ratio was relatively low, right? If interest rate's at 7%, your rental to your debt ratio better be closer to 7, 8%, right? Because now you know that portfolio is more resilient. So really quickly, I needed to add more cash flow to the portfolio so that I could increase the overall ratio. And one of the key thing was, you know, in 2021, I wanted to delay, you know, buying the home that I was going to build on. But the opportunity came and it was very hard for me, you know, like you have the ability to borrow. You know, I bought something, if you guys live in Auckland, St. John's Park, you know, bought for 1.7 million. It's going to get rid of the house and build two houses on it. That is still the plan. I think, you know, if we like in the that was still like maybe 12 months to 18 months away. That is something on the cards. If the market recovers to a point where I feel like if I do this build, I'm still going to get decent margin out of it. If not, I would just get rid of it and then maybe buy something else. But that was a decision I made in 2021. I did buy something 1.7, you know, like next door to mine. Someone bought that property for just a ridiculous amount for 2.3 million. And we virtually have the same size land. Maybe that condition of that house was better. So it was very hard for me to say no, but it wasn't a cash flow asset, right? Like even though it was significantly below market value, the asset wasn't cash flow. So that means I have to chip in quite a bit of money. That really pushed me to not be as active, right? I needed to maybe slow down a little bit and see how I can readjust. So that's why that decision, because it made my overall cash flow to debt ratio lower. I mean, I still value cash flow property. Like I was buying home and incomes and multi-units, but that was the big land bank that I stuck in that didn't have much as much cash flow. Had to do something about it. So added this multi-unit asset. Settled in end of 2022, did the renovations, got over 11% yield at the end. And what I wanted to do, because I was in a resilient mindset, I wanted to increase the cash flow. So I was finishing off like a South Auckland build. You guys might have heard of that if you guys been watching or listening for a while. That took a while. And so the mindset there was I buy something and I sell something. It wasn't so much about growth. Okay. Like I needed to increase the cash flow. I need to swap some of the assets that I have. And that was the one key thing. And I wish perhaps, you know, if I look back, right, that I stuck to my principle and maybe not got too excited just because I could buy the property. Maybe if I did that, like, I mean, if I reflect, if I stick to that principle and not buy that, when 2022 came, I would have been in a very strong position to pick up multi-cash flow deals. And I would have been in a significantly stronger position. So paying attention to that cash flow to debt ratio, especially when the market is hot, is probably like the thing that I know needs to improve. Like moving forward, I will never put myself on that position where my cash flow to debt ratio is so close together, especially in a hot market. When interest rate is, you know, 2.5%, you better have a cash flow of 5, 6, 7. You know, don't go for like, okay, well, 2, 2.5. So maybe I'll have cash flow of 1.5. As soon as interest rate spikes to 5, like that portfolio is ruined, right? At the time, I was like 2.5. Maybe I had like 3.5%. So I was cash flow positive, but it didn't have enough margin. So that's something I definitely pay attention to. So second lesson was like, I talked about the South Auckland property. You know, that was one thing that I wanted to learn was the development side. It was like a development that I kind of started back in, yeah, around around 2021, it took so long. And what I realize is like, this is the lesson here, like outsourcing and aligning the incentives. This company, you know, outsourced it because I wanted to have less headaches and just be more hands off and not think about it, but just watch on the side so I can learn. But what happened is because this company is not incentivized to do things with speed, right? And there was a couple of hiccups during the process. It's like really, really like straightforward things. Like, okay, maybe I share this with you. We launched a consent and then, you know, we're asking for the EPA, which is like the engineering approval. And what happened is it was then when we got that approval, then we go ask the neighbor whether or not they will give us the stormwater. So, I mean, that's just like a really common sense thing. It's like, instead of getting that approval, you should maybe get the approval from the neighbors first. So it's like, I was just really hands off. Obviously, I've been, you know, busy with family and properties and also the business, right? Well, for me to allow that to happen, because I have to take ownership, even though I'm outsourcing, right? So they did that and I was stuck in the like no man's land. They already got rid of one of the dwellings on the site. And so I'm getting less rent. And then they tell me I'm stuck on this thing. And I'm stuck there for like 6-7 months before they found an alternative solution, right? That was a major, major lesson in itself. And it's just like, man, like no one's going to take this ownership. You either maybe pay an external consultant to review this stuff, or you have to align the incentive so that, you know, they have some consequence if things are not being done well. With this company that I was using, don't want to name them, it's like the project manager changed 4 times, right? And things just really slowed down. And that was really an important lesson. Is like, if you're outsourcing, how can you align the objective? Is there an upside that you can give them? Is there a downside that you can also give them if things don't go the way planned? Because now I'm stuck with that. And then the second one is like the title issue. And I just can't believe how long that took. That was in another lesson in itself. And then the third thing that really slowed down was the market changing. So I sold the property in the auction. And then what happened was the title took so long to issue. That first buyer got cold feet. And then I had to take it to auction again. So that really slowed down my process. And there was so much learning in that just one development. And so aligning the incentive is something that I would definitely think about if I'm outsourcing anything. You know, reward your project manager if things are being done quickly. Agree on a price that is lower. If you keep it within the timeline, I give you more than what you asked for. But if you don't, you get the lower amount. And I think that would definitely get you a better result in the long term. So the third lesson that I had, you know, things that worked well for me, was looking at property investment. Instead of trying to guesstimate interest rate, I use interest rate averaging and also thinking about locking in cash flow. So because we were in a high interest rate environment, luckily my average interest rate in the last couple of years is sitting around that 5.5%. That's the average interest rate, because with 5 mil of debt, not all of it is on 2.5, not all of it is on 7. Luckily, right, back in 2020, I locked in some interest rate for 2.99 for years, and that's proved to be the moneymaker, right? So when you're locking in interest rate, it's important to think about maybe the next 4 or 5 years, because that's the wave you want to ride. You want to ride out the next 4 or 5 years. It's not about maybe profiting immediately, but if you're going to hold it for a long time, like having some consistency and certainty for your cash flow for 4 to 5 years is important. So I locked in that for 4 years, and that really held the portfolio together, because without that, you know, 1.2 million on that interest rate and then some on like 4.99 for another 4 years, I don't think I would have lived as comfortably in the last couple of years. Like properties would have been like a way major burden. Like I still had to prioritize putting more cash into the portfolio in the last couple of years. But without those, like without taking those long term and go, you know what, because it's cash flow that I'm locking in, it doesn't matter if the interest rate is like 0.5% cheaper right now, I'm locking in my cash flow for 4 or 5 years. Like instead of trying to gain another, you know, 10K, we're probably talking about like 10, 15K max, but certainty for 4 or 5 years is important. And this is actually aligned with the lesson that I learned from Matthew Gilligan. He always talk about like property is a long-term game and you're just trying to ride out the wave, right? If you can have locked in interest rate for 10 years, he'll always take that because he'll know exactly how much is going to cost him. And if he can make that neutral, doesn't need to earn anything from it, and he can hold it for 10 years and then he can do whatever he wants, like sell the property for the gain value, develop the property, but riding out the waves is so important. So I feel like that is something that I stick with as well. It's like, hey, my investor clients, like, you know, don't gamble on the 1 and 2 year rate if you're investing, right? You've got interest deductibility coming back. Well, if you can have a cash flow neutral position that's going to cost you potentially 3-4 grand a year, that's okay. If you can lock it for 4 or 5 years, do it. Because if interest rate did go significantly lower, you can break out of it. You can pay some break fees. It's going to be tax deductible expense. You can put it on the loan anyway and then go for like a lower interest rate and benefit on that cash flow. So I think when it comes to property investing, like the medium term is more important. So if you can lock in positive cash flow, that's going to be great. Now, my fourth lesson is embracing resilient overgrowth. Right? I talked about the approach that I took in 2022 is to not just have that growth like, oh, you have to add more. Add more revenue, add more portfolio size. I think embracing resilience was something that I did well last year. It's like pivot from like, okay, just got to keep buying more to just go, how do I build this more resilient? How do I change some of the properties that I have in the portfolio to more cash flow? Swap some of the assets, likewise in the business as well, swap some of the assets so that we can have more cash flow. And this is a mindset that I always encourage my clients now. It's like, don't always think about like big portfolio, think about sustainability, think about resilience. Because if you can build your portfolio in a way where it's like, well, you're still getting steady growth, but it's comfortable. It's not like going to cost you a ton of money. It's not going to stress you out at night. You know, like what if you lose your job? What if you had to go get a new job and it's not going to pay as much? What if you're going to miss some rent? How do you set your portfolio up in a way that's going to be resilient? Could you have a bigger revolving credit? Could you have a freehold security? If something happens, you can get rid of it and then you'll have that lump of cash straight away, right? Build your portfolio in a way where you prioritize resilience over growth. And I believe this will give you much better return. That is something that I know has benefited myself. So there you guys have it. Those are the four key lessons that I reflected on in 2023. You know, I have some plans this year as well. So like as I get rid of the South Auckland properties, I already sold both of them. I'm going to try and get rid of another one that is on a lower yield in Auckland. And if I renovate, sell that, I'll have a bit more cash to come back in and then use that for development. Because development, I'm getting maybe closer to 6-7% return on my money, if not more actually. Like if I'm just doing pure development without accounting for the initial cash that is already put in or the initial borrowing for the property, I could see 7-8% return on, you know, build like additional lending that I'm getting 7-8%, which is really good, right? To be able to increase your overall cash flow position. Hopefully you found something valuable. And obviously, you know, I don't ask for much. If you guys learned something, if you guys found value, all I ask for is that you share this with one person that will benefit from it as well. Again, thank you for listening. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Talk soon.